The US sanctions Sudan. Hello, and you're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report live from the BBC World Service. I'm Leanna Byrne. We're going to start this programme in Sudan. The US government has issued sanctions against four Sudanese companies and several individuals for fueling the war between rival military forces. Intense conflict erupted in Sudan in mid-April, forcing almost 1.5 million people from their homes. Peace talks in Jeddah, brokered by Saudi Arabia and the US, have also collapsed. The US says these new sanctions will cut off financial flows to the army and the rapid support forces, who get a lot of their funding from the country's gold mines. The BBC's James Copnell has been speaking to Dr. Merzad Barajurdi from Missouri University, and he said the sanctions approach won't be so effective.
It's really hard to believe that sanctions of this sort is going to have the ability to bring the two sides together when the gulf between them is so, you know, immense, as we have witnessed, you know, with the breakdown of the talks. It's a punitive measure, you know, as a way of twisting their arms. But I think there are other, you know, logics at work at the moment that is keeping the two sides apart from one another, and sanctions is not going to be the necessary, you know, ingredient that can bring them back to the negotiating table.
What tools then do the United States, other countries have if they want to try and push the generals towards some sort of peace deal?
There doesn't seem to be really too many options, you know, besides this type of sanctions, or trying to perhaps, you know, get the African Union, you know, play a bit more of an active role, considering that each of the sides needs also resources. That might be another way to try to rein them in, either through, you know, neighboring states and making it more difficult for them to get access to the type of weapons that they need to prolong the conflict.
Dr. Merzad Barajurdi speaking there. Now, Apple's biggest supplier, Foxconn, who are based in Taiwan, will start manufacturing millions of iPhones a year in the southern India state of Karnataka by April next year. The project is set to create around 50,000 jobs. And Apple's decision to manufacture their flagship model in India and diversify its supply chains away from China, I mean, that's coming at a time when tensions are rising between Washington and Beijing. Archana Shukla is from the BBC's bureau in Mumbai, in India. Hi, Archana.
Hey, hi there.
So this is a lot of jobs, isn't it? What do you think it's saying about Foxconn's plans for India?
You know, in the last couple of years, five to six years, Foxconn has expanded its presence in India. And it's mainly triggered by two things. One, there is a rising demand for domestic demand for iPhones. And Apple, the company Apple is wanting to expand its manufacturing footprint in India. They want to shift their manufacturing out of China and diversify from China, and India is a destination they're looking at, and that's making Foxconn even more interested in the country. Along with the manufacturing of iPhone and components, they're also looking at investing in manufacturing of semiconductors in the country as well.
So what do you think, Archana? Is this a big win for India and its economy?
Absolutely. From the manufacturing standpoint, yes, because over the last couple of years, India's manufacturing footprint had not increased despite big policy moves of Make in India by the government. But with companies wanting, you know, global companies wanting to diversify their supply chains away from China, India offers a good space with manpower, with a workforce, skilled workforce, English-speaking workforce, and a potential to grow on the manufacturing side.
The BBC's Archana Shukla, thank you so much for joining us on Marketplace.
Thank you.
Now, let's do the numbers. European and Asian markets on the up after Congress passed the debt ceiling bill. Europe's region-wide Stoxx 600 rose 0.8%, and Hong Kong's Hang Seng index up 4%. British Airways has been fined $1.1 million by the US government over claims it didn't pay out over cancelled pandemic flights. The US Department of Transportation says the airline had not provided timely refunds to passengers and that it had received more than 1,200 complaints about the airline. And BA says it acted lawfully at all times. Now, you're probably thinking about breakfast at this time of day, but in my time zone, I'm looking towards lunch. Technology, working from home, and habits were picked up in the pandemic are all changing the way we fuel up for the rest of the day. The BBC's Ruth Alexander spoke to these workers in Manchester in the UK about any changes they'd spotted.
What's the point of going out for lunch with colleagues? Like, why do you do it? Is it just about the food?
Get away from the office for an hour.
I mean, it was my first day today, so it was nice to come out and meet everyone. So it's a nice social side as well.
Were you eating on your own?
Yeah, I got a lot of staff, so I end up not sort of sitting and eating with them necessarily, because I don't think they want to sit and eat with their boss. But
and has there been a change? Like, before COVID, were you going out with colleagues more? Was a work lunch like more of a thing than it is now?
Yeah, definitely.
Do you miss it?
Not hugely.
And in the City of London, a financial hub, long, boozy lunches are becoming a thing of the past, but they are remembered fondly by some, including veteran investor David Buick.
An average lunch would be a very large gin and tonic, followed by a three-course lunch, washed down with a decent bottle of claret, and then two large Grand Marniers to finish it off. You didn't have to watch until latterly what was going on in New York. It was technology that changed things. With the opening of the Life Market in, I think it was 1984, which is the futures market, which added a completely new dimension to trading, was the start of when people started to pull their horns in as regards lunches.
Well, those lunches sound like a lot of fun, a good time, although probably not very productive. Veteran investor David Buick there, and that's it from the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. Thanks to Alex Bell for producing, Solmaz Aslan on the tech, Will Bain for editing, and I'm Leanna Byrne. Thanks for listening.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.